Today's daf in Masechet Beitzah, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Lamed Daled. However, what I wanted to do was, because Rabbi Barnea insisted that I should just relate to some of the things we spoke about yesterday, I just want to begin with a couple of interesting points, because before we go on, we have some major assertions by Rashi on Daf Lamed Gimel, didn't have a chance to discuss, which are Nogei Halacha. We'll get back to Halacha later. I don't want to take up a lot of your time, but there's two very important points which are going to be Nogei, today's Sugis and later Sugis as well, so it's worthwhile pointing them out. If you take a look at your Rashi on Daf Lamed Gimel, Omid Aleph, before the Mishnah that we began yesterday about the toothpicks, you'll notice that Rashi says, and this is in the last 8 lines of the thin Rashis on Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph. So Rashi says over there that Hach Hilchata, Paskin over here, that Yavishta Shori and Retifta is Osir, remember? So that if you've got the dry wood, that is okay because it's Chozi Vahasaka, but if it's damp, then it's Osir. So now Rashi has two very important assertions over here. One is that Hach Hilchata Aliba Deman De Itle Mukza Ikba, but it's not Nogea us, because we hold like Rabbi Shimon in two things, Bein B'Mukza, Bein B'Davar She'enu Mitkaven. And not only that, we're also making like Rabbi Yehuda, B'Nogea Machshire Eichel Nefesh, in which case, all of the things that we mentioned before are not problems according to us, says Rashi. The Kulu Shori, all of the cases that we had, whether we were talking about putting pots on top of the chaviyot, and we were talking about putting the tripod, and everything that we've said up until now, how to build a fire and to make sure that you start from the top and that then you stick things into the bottom, and everything that we mentioned before is not lahalacha. Why? Because kol ha'amoraim she'asru et elu lamala are all talmidei de Rav. And Rav holds like Rabbi Yehuda b'muktzah. But we don't hold of Rabbi Yehuda b'muktzah. We hold of Rabbi Shimon. And therefore, the whole sugya that says hilchata is all wrong, says Rashi. Now, what's fascinating is that every last one of the three things that Rashi is saying, namely, this has to do with paskening dafka like Rabbi Yehuda. This has to do with paskening dafka not like Rabbi Yehuda when it comes to the issue of makshirei eichel nefesh. And this has to do with paskening bedafka not like Rabbi Yehuda when it comes to the question of a dover she'eino miskaven. Every one of those assertions is argued with by other rishonim, and indeed, we paskin not like Rashi in every one of these assertions, which is quite remarkable. And what we're actually involved with over here is a completely different world. And let me explain to you why. First of all, we have the major issue over here, which is whether it's actually true that this story would be considered bichlal a dover she'eino miskaven. That's one major issue. According to Rashi, it's a dover she'eino miskaven. Why? Because what it is that you are doing, you have no interest in building an oihel, and therefore it isn't really defined as something that would have to do with binyan. So why would there be anything to worry about if you hold like Rabbi Shimon? So this would be the assertion of Rashi. The problem is that what that is saying runs against the entire way that we end up understanding Rabbi Shimon's Dover She'eino Miskaven. And Tosfos makes a big fuss about this at all as well. And he says, look, you don't call something a Dover She'eino Miskaven unless he does not intend to do that act. You don't call it a Dover She'eino Miskaven because he intends to do it for a different purpose. And it's exactly the same thing, every last thing that he wants to do, that's not called a dover she'eino miskaven. That is exactly what it is that he's setting out to do, and in that case, it certainly is not dependent in Rabbi Shimon Shita. Okay, that's number one. Number two, the assertion that according to Rabbi Yehuda, you can do makshirei oichal nefesh, and therefore all of these things which are really makshirei oichal nefesh, we need to use them. So what would be the problem of doing them? And we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. That's all very nice, except for the unfortunate fact that the Ran points out, now this really gets back to the question, the more deeper question, before I mention the Ran, about what the halacha is legabe all of these kelim that we're making over here. And that has everything to do with our problem of opening bottle tops and so on, which I'll speak to you about later. I don't want to take up the time out of the daf. I want to add it afterwards. But the question is it true that ein binyan bekelim means at all ein binyan bekelim? And there would not even be a problem, therefore, makeh bepatish on a kli, because it's only when you're finishing up something that is considered to be a type of binyan that you would call it a makeh bepatish. Or is ein binyan bekelim only where you're not dealing with something that is the final step of actually making the kli out of nowhere? Now, as you can see, because of the fact that the Taz paskins, that would remain a deraisa by kelim, that is the problem of the bottle caps, the old bottle caps, where when you twist, you end up with taking off a little ring that is left around the bottom, and now you have that top. If you hold that it's shayach makeh bepatish, then this is the creation literally out of nothing, out of something that was unusable before as a bottle top, and now it is a bottle top. We'll get into that later. But because of that taz, we can now understand a little bit more, even though Lamaisa, we don't necessarily paskin like the taz, although the poskim say it's gedai to be cheshish and so on. But what we do have a problem with is the Ran. The Ran says that even Rabbi Yehuda, who says that it's okay to engage in machshirei oichal nefesh, where you couldn't have done it yesterday. So let's say, for instance, the case where the spit broke on Yontif. So you couldn't have fixed it yesterday. You couldn't have done anything with it yesterday. So therefore, Rashi's argument is that since Lamaisa ein binyan bekelim, and machshirei oichal nefesh is mutter, and all the things that would have been mutter for oichal nefesh, so according to Rabbi Yehuda, which is the way we paskin, it should be mutter to actually fix it. Now, this is the way the Ramah actually brings the halacha. However, the Mishnah Berurah says, do not rely on this Ramah, because of the Ran and the other shitas, and it's kedai to be machmer. What is that other shita? That the only place that Rabbi Yehuda was mutter, machshirei oichal nefesh, was where what it is that you're doing is related bedavka to the ochel nefesh that you're going to be doing now. But where what you're doing is a long-term tikkun that can be utilized for many months, such as fixing a kli, in the case of the spit, even Rabbi Yehuda did not consider that to be makshirei ochel nefesh that were mutter. So then that means the other argument of Rashi also collapses, that this would be, according to us, who paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, that this would be mutter. It would not be mutter. Furthermore, the other assertion of Rashi, where he says that the only difference between Yavishta and Retivta is because of the question that lo nitnu etzim ela lahasaka, and that's dependent in the machlokas of Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda about mukta. Tainas Tosfos, no, it's not. Because even according to Rabbi Shimon, it's fine that Rabbi Shimon holds that you can use etzim for things other than hasaka, but that's only where the etzim themselves were roi for hasaka. If they're roi for hasaka, you can use them for other things. But if the etzim are not even roi for their prime use, which is hasaka, and that's the case of retifta, where everything is damp, even Rabbi Shimon is maida, that you can't use them at all. Therefore, this is not dependent in the machlokas of lo nitna etzim ela lahasaka. So this is furthermore a problem.
And the Hesed Gadol doesn't help here, the fact that it is used for
the Hesed Gadol is the Gemara's question about what possible use would there be. That's not Nogea Rashi's determination over here. I'm talking about the theory. As far as how to determine each piece, that's why I'm not talking about that. But the question of whether any of this is Nogea Lahalacha, which Rashi claims no, each piece actually is Nogea Lahalacha. And furthermore, the question is about the other assertion of Rashi, in which the Dorash Rava, that you're not allowed to go in to make an Ud, and Rashi says about that also that that's dependent on Fisha Mesika Bekalim, Mesika Beshivre Kalim, the Ud Shanishbar, and that you can't go in. So this is going also, says Rashi. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it would, this is Dafka because of Muktzah. And that's why you can't go in to take an Ud. Says Tosfos, it's difficult to believe what Rashi is claiming. Namely, that the Gemara is ignoring all of the Piskei Halachas until now, where we had so many Gemaras that were like Rabbi Shimon, and suddenly he's just coming out with Halacha that is not Halacha. Dolcheku, lomar, shashas, kaima deloki, ilchata. I don't believe it, says Tosfos. Therefore, Tainus Tosfos, another thing that Rabbi Shimon would be made of. Rabbi Shimon would be made of that anything that is tikkun maneh, and this again, as I said, relates to the question of how usher tikkun maneh is, if you hold that ein binyan bekelim, that Rabbi Shimon is made of that tikkun maneh is a completely different issue than the question of whether etzim are nita lahasaka or not. And there, we don't get into the machlokas about muktzah. So again, because Rashi is assuming that there's not a problem of tikkun maneh, and the only issue is muktzah, that's because it's with these other shitas that hold that there's no issue of binyan bekelim at all. So I just want to bring to your attention, every last thing that Rashi said is open to completely different interpretations, and halakha lemaisa. We end up paskening every one of the Gemaras that Rashi says we don't pasken. So that in terms of the halakha lemaisa, you do have to be careful about this binyan. It's not considered to be a davar she'eino miskaven. You do need somebody to hold it up for you if you're putting the barrels onto one onto the other, or all of the cases that we had about the kedera. Every single one of those are pasken halakha lemaisa. So much, unfortunately, for Rashi's three-pronged attack on the Psak of the Gemara. Anyway, we'll go back to the halacha after we finish the daf, Bezrat Hashem, and let us go to today's daf. So we had gotten up to the sugya of what would be wrong with heating up a tile. Now, we need to review that for a moment, because it turns out to be central in many, many issues. There were two possibilities of how to understand the question of a tile about heating it up. The first approach in the Gemara that we had yesterday, which was the first two lines of Lamed Dalet, which are Zardaf today, the first approach was you need to first find out whether the tile can handle the heat. And a tile that can't handle the heat should get out of the kitchen. And therefore, what would the problem be? The problem would be that you'd be doing all of this work at heating up the tile, and then pow, it shatters, and you did all of that work as a tircha that was unnecessary for Yontev, and that you're not allowed to do, which we saw was an issue that had been brought up before. That was approach A in the Gemara. Approach B was mipnei shetzarich lechasman. Now that approach is a completely different approach. You must first temper tiles before you're able to use them. And this is a completely different problem, because as Rashi defines the problem, the reason you can't heat the tiles is because that is tempering tiles. So you can't do that, because it's absolutely necessary to temper the tiles. Now, today we're going to see that it makes a tremendous difference which of those two pshatim you say in terms of all of the dinim of Yontif. Because if you're worried about the possibility that something may not work out, and it'll end up being a tircha on Yontif Shalol Tzorech, then that is going to define many, many halachas of Yontif. So the first one that we begin with today goes back to the Mishnah in Chulin. And over there, we just need a little bit of an introduction. There is a concept which is called drisa. Drisa is one of the trefas. But drisa does not mean because something was trampled on or was in an accident that it's trefa because maybe something happened to one of its organs, because that would not be a different trefa. Drisa is a different type of trefa, which is called risuk evarim, which is a shock to the system. And that shock to the system is not visible as a particular trefa to any one of the internal organs, and nonetheless it's considered to be a trefa. Now, the only way to establish that something is not a nidras, and therefore is kosher to eat, is bedavka for it to survive. So it has to survive for 24 hours, and then we would say it's not concussed, it's not in system shock, and therefore it's okay to eat. But we have a different problem. The very fact that it was in this serious accident means that it may also have suffered some of the other trefas, which are not testable by the simple fact of survival for 24 hours, a brain concussion maybe, and a systemic shock maybe, but not a particular hole in the lung or something like that. So therefore, there's two separate issues. After survival for 24 hours, then you're going to have to check every single organ, which is a mess, but okay. So therefore, the Mishnah over there, which was talking about birds, and then it says over there, if somebody stepped on a bird, so it was durasa, or for that matter, a bird collided with a glass door, or somebody slammed a bird into a door. Or maybe an animal crushed it, but it's still mifarcheset, so it's still moving around, it's fluttering around, but it can't stand, because standing itself is a bedika for isike vorim. And it remains alive for 24 hours, shatam eit la'eit, and he shechs it, it's kosher. However, omer b'lezer b'b'yanai mishuber b'lezer b'antignos, it may be kosher because of risuke vorim, but it still definitely is going to require a bedika, so you're going to have to check all of its internal organs. Fine. Now the question is like this. Since that's the case, can you shecht it on Yontif if it survived 24 hours? Because you may go to the trouble of shechting it, and then you have to check its organs, and then suddenly you'll discover it's got a hole in an intestine because of its collision. And then you won't be able to eat it. So the question is, can you do the shechita when you're not sure that you're going to be able to eat it? Do we assume that we've got an indication that there are issues that may prevent the use? Do we worry about that on Yom Tov or not? Now, the similarity to our Mishnah about the tiles, the heating of the tiles that may shatter, is suddenly obvious. You can now understand why this is being brought up over here. Omar Leis, Reb Zera said to Reb Yirmiyah, well, look at the Mishnah here in Beitza. The Mishnah says, Eim el abnin et ha-ra'afim litzlot v'hem. You're not allowed to heat up tiles. And we asked, what in the world are you doing wrong by heating up tiles? Micah Ovid. And Rabbi Bar Bachana quoted Reb Yochanan as saying that since we're talking about new tiles, and those new tiles may bust, and since it may end up to be useless. You did all of this work, and now your tiles just crack, and you're not going to be able to use them to cook with. Okay, so then that shows you that the same thing should be true about a bird that crashed into a glass door. You may have waited 24 hours. You're now going to do the shechita. But now it's going to turn out that you can't eat the bird because when you do the bedika that you still need to make, even though you've established that there's no problem of risik evorim for the drisa, you still have to establish that there's no hole in the lungs, no hole in the intestine, et cetera, et cetera. This is going to take you all day to check anyway, but fine. So you may not be able to eat it. So it's the same thing? No? Said Rabbi Yirmiyah, oh, that's how you understood the Mishnah. I didn't understand it that way. I went according to the second teretz that we had at the end of the daf yesterday, according to which, Anan, b'pnei shetzorich l'chasman matninan la. I understood that the Mishnah says you're not allowed to heat up the tiles because of the second teretz, which is that heating the tile is itself considered to be a tikkun of the tile, so that you are actually being metaken maneh by doing that. And therefore, you're not allowed to do it, not because maybe you're doing a tircha shelo letzorech, you're not allowed to do it because you're doing an absolute iser of tikkun maneh. What does that have to do with the question that I asked you? I asked you whether you're allowed to shecht it, even though you're going to have to do a bedika on the evarim. So therefore, it's not nogea. All right, so now we see how those two pshatim would be koveya different halachas that seem to be far away from the issue of heating tiles and end up to border on the same questions. Tanya, another question that's snogia. It says l'gabe cooking on Shabbos. So one person brings a fire. Another person brings wood. Another person puts the empty pot onto the fire. Another person brings water and puts it into the pot. Another person brings spices and adds it to the pot. Another person goes on and stirs what's in the pot with a ladle. All of them end up in chayev for what they did on Shabbos. So the one who brings, the way Rashi understands it, the one who brings the fire is because he was mavir when he was moving the fire to the place where it was going to be cooking. The one who brings the wood is obviously being mavir by lighting the fire. If you put water or spices into the pot, you're being mevashal. If you stir a pot, which makes it cook faster, you're also being mevashal. The only question that is not clear is what is the guy who's putting an empty pot on the fire, what is he doing? That we'll talk about in a moment. So here it says all of them are chayev, ask the Gemara, but the problem is that there's another braita that says only the last guy is chayev and everybody else is putter. Answers the Gemara, fine. The first, this braita, which says there that they were all chayev, is talking about where you started with bringing the fire. So then anybody who did something based on that was either being mevashel, was being mamayer, the bishul, and so on. The second braita is talking about that only the last person is chayev because you only brought the fire at the end. Okay, fine. Now let's get back to what Snogea us. What Snogea us is why does it say that if the fire was there first, then the guy who brings an empty pot and puts it on the fire is chayev? What did he do? So Bishlam Akulu, I understand that all of the other guys here, they all did something. Ka'avde Maisa. But the guy that was shofet at Akdera, all he did was take an empty pot and put it into position where you can now use it for cooking. I mean, I understand, maybe it's Misayeya, Ivre Avera, whatever, and he's part of it, but he certainly didn't do an Isser Malacha. So why are we saying that he's Chayev? Omar, Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, we're talking about over here a brand new pot. And a brand new pot is the same as a brand new tile. Mishum libun re'afim naguba. The reason that we said that it's usher is because of the problem of heating up tiles. So the same way that heating up tiles causes them, and this is the second shot, to become tempered and now to be able to stand up against the fire, so too, just taking a brand new pot, putting it on a fire, is going to temper it, and therefore he's chayev here because of tikkun mana, and not because of Bishul. Fine. So there are two. We have a question. By the way, Tosis points out, he says, there are people that have a minag that they are very careful not to use a new pot on Shabbos because of tempering. But this is ridiculous, says Tosis, because tempering is only where you put something directly on a fire and there's no liquid. If there's liquid in a pot and you're cooking in it, you're not tempering it because your maximum temperature that you reach is going to be defined by the boiling point of the contents of the pot, and that nowhere near reaches a temperature of tempering. So therefore, it's just a misunderstanding. It isn't heating of any level that's going to cause a actual tempering of a pot like we're talking about the tile. Turn her up on it. Another issue where this is nogea. Suppose somebody has a new oven, or he's got a new stovetop. So he's got tanur v'kirayim chadashim. And now he wants to use it on Shabbos for maybe storing some chocolate cookies in. Harein kakola kelem andi tolim b'chotz. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, because it's maybe a klisha malach toli yisr, but you want to use it for hatter. And it's like anything else. As long as it's in your chotzer, and there's no iser of hotzah, you can use it. But be very careful not to spread oil on them. Ain't sucking no tam shemen. Don't take a polishing cloth and rub the cloth over them, because this is also smoothing, it's polishing, and these are final steps in making these things usable. You can't pour cold water over them if they're very hot because that tempers them. And im b'shvil le'efot, but you could cool them down if you need to bake. Now, this obviously is talking about Yontif, not Shabbos, this last piece. So in other words, if the oven is too hot to bake in, then you can pour cold water on them. Now, even though we said before that pouring cold water on them is considered to be an actual act of tempering them, and we said that based on the Gemara yesterday of Re'afim, that's usher. Over here, we're talking about a case where there's actually a number of different approaches to this, but one of the fascinating approaches is that we're talking about over here a case where the bread is ready now to be cooked. This is how the Mishnah Berurah understands it, and he brings this from the Ran. So he says over here, Hocha harei hapat muchan lahanicho betanur. You have bread ready to bake. You come to the oven, and in coming to the oven, you find it's going to burn your bread. It's too hot. So in that case, where it's the act that you're doing is for the actual cooking now, that's called Urchel Nefesh. And that doesn't get into the problem of whether this is a long-term tikkun keli or not, because that's what I'm doing now. I'm baking bread. That's how the Mishnah Berurah learns, based on the Ran. Tosfos learns that the little amount of cooling that you're going to have to do in order to get it to a suitable temperature for cooking the bread is not the drastic change of temperature that is called tempering. And therefore, it's not really usher if the whole point is just cooling it a bit. And there's other approaches as well. But at least we should understand we're not dealing with a contradiction to the sugya that we just had. Now, another issue that has to do with Hachanas Eichlin on Yontif would be the question of Meliga. So people who eat Pecha, as you know, I don't know if there's anyone here who even knows what Pecha is anymore, but people who eat Pecha, oh, look at this. Okay, so we got a lot of Pecha eaters here. So how do you make Pecha? So basically what you need to do, you're going to be making this, which is basically gelatin that you get out of the bones of the legs of either the chicken or the cow, whatever it is that you're making it from. So you have to first remove the hair from the leg. So you can be moleg et harosh ve et haraglayim, and you can even singe them. Mahavavim otam ba'ur on yontav, but you cannot be tofum otam becharsit. Charsit is either, remember we had before, ways of depilatories. The reason you can't do that is because that's done by people who tan the skin, and then that you're not allowed to do. You're only doing something that's going to allow you to cook this leg without getting filth in it, right? So you can't do an act that is part of tanning. Okay, you cannot cut the hair off with scissors. It's also a problem because it looks like you want to actually preserve the hair for some purpose. The aim goes is in a tayarak, but he's parat shalom. By the way, once we're talking about haircuts, well, how about a vegetable cut? I mean, vegetables also get a tisporet. So how do they do that? Because if you're going to have a vegetable, it's got these ugly leaves on it that have to be trimmed off. So you give it a trim. But don't give your veggie a trim if you're going to be using the kind of scissors that you use in order to cut the veggie from the ground, because then people on Yontif, people will think that you did that on Yontif, and therefore you can't give them a trim with those kind of scissors. But you are allowed to be metaken et hakundus ve'et hakaviyot. Now, these are the kind of vegetables that is a question of exactly what these are, maybe artichokes or things like that, which some of the achronim bring. But they require a tremendous amount of work, says Rashi, and that's fine. We don't have anything that as usher for ochel nefesh because it's too much work. Umasikin va'ofin bapurni. You're even allowed to light and to bake in a modern oven. A purni is a very large oven that has an opening from the side. Now, this is very different from the oven, as you know, that we were talking about all through Hilchos Shabbos and all through Hilchos Yontif, where over there the oven opens from the top. It's very small. The bread is put around the edges of the oven. It's not brought through inside. And it's much easier to heat and to handle. However, if you've got a lot of stuff and you have many guests, and you're not going to be able to prepare enough in a regular tanur of their time, you're allowed to use a large oven, like we have, with an open door, even though that involves a lot more work in terms of heating it, bringing more fuel, and so on. But that's not a problem, because that's what you need. What's more, you can even heat up an antiki. Now, we saw antikis in Shabbos. An antiki is like a large samovar, which will keep the water heat for hot for all through the week. And because of that, you'd think that there might be a problem, basically the same problem that the Ron discussed of, in terms of Rabbi Yehuda and the making a kli that's a long-term kli. So you might have thought that when you're heating up water that's going to stay hot after Yontif, that would be a problem as well. It's not, because since this is what you're going to be using over Yontif, it's perfectly okay to use your big oven, to use your big samovar, and so on. But one thing that you cannot do is take a brand new oven and bake in that, because that could easily crack. It's talking about over here, this is the first time that's been heated up, and that then it would mean that everything that you did was for nothing. It was tircha shel tzarech. So this goes back to the other approach of the ra'afim, where the problem with the ra'afim is the possibility of cracking. So that means we have the issue of cracking as well that we're going to paskin here, even if we have the other approach, which is that it was a tikkun mana. Tanu rabbanan. Ein nofchin b'mafoach. You can't use a bellow to keep the fire going, provide it with oxygen. But what you can do is nofchin b'shvoferet. You could take like a straw or a pipe and blow through it in order to do it. And the difference is that there's nothing innately wrong with the bellows other than the fact that bellows are commonly used for commercial purposes. If you're trying to get a very hot flame and you're working with metalwork, metal workers always use a bellow. So because of that, we don't want you using a bellow, again, because of the uvdah d'chol problem. But you could use a pipe. Ve'ein metaknim netashpud. Another thing you can't do, basically this was the issue we had earlier of cutting paper. Remember we said you can't cut paper to put to make it wet and then to put it on top of the grate to prevent the little pieces of herring. Remember, we always barbecue our herring. So to prevent the maliach to be falling through the grate, so you put paper there, we said you break a plate and use a piece to support the herring. So here, you cannot take a shpud and cut it into two pieces, because then you're actually making a kli for it, and that is usher, because either it's machshirei oichol nefesh, and it's going shalok Rabbi Yehuda, as Rashi claims, or maybe it's going afilo Rabbi Yehuda, and what we're talking about over here, together with ein mechadadinato, you're not even allowed to sharpen the shpod. Why not? If it's machshirei oichol nefesh, according to Rabbi Yehuda. So either it's not going like Rabbi Yehuda, which is Rashi's approach over here, that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't make a distinction between tikkun mana and anything else, or it's talking about where it broke before Yontev, and you could have fixed it before Yontev, and that even Rabbi Yehuda is made, says Rashi, that there's no heter of makshirei oichol nefesh that were able to be fixed before Yontev. So there's three possibilities here. Rashi brings two of them, and then we have Aran's approach. And then we have another issue, the last issue that's nogea, is you might take a kana, you just take a piece of reed, and you break it into two parts to put on top of like we were talking about the paper and so on. And that's what I was referring to before. We're not that, I'm sorry. I had flipped ahead in my mind. So you cannot crack a reed into two to use as a support for your herring barbecue to prevent the herring from falling through. Avo mefatzina te egoz bematlit. You are allowed to crack a nut by putting a cloth around it and then biting on it, right? Or using, you don't want to bust your teeth. So people will often, if they've got nut cracking fingers or nut cracking teeth, they put something around it to protect their fingers or their teeth. So even though that might end up tearing So you'd think that that would be the same because we've just been reminded about tearing the paper. It's not, because over there you did not intend to tear it, and even if it would tear, it wouldn't really be an Isser D'Oraisa of Korea, because over here you're only Chayiv Min D'Oraisa if you're Korea Amanat Litvar. And obviously your intention here has nothing to do with the Korea. It has to do with the protection. So therefore, we're not going to Aser it. You can do that. Ve'in Kol Shishin Shema Tikara. We don't have to worry, even if it does, because nothing so terrible would happen. Now, we're about to do something strange, Rashi believes. And that is, we are going to call on our Kapitan to introduce a Mishnah, which seems to be a continuation of a Mishnah that we had yesterday about toothpicks. And that's weird, because between that Mishnah and this Mishnah, we had all those other sugyas about being molid and making the ore out of the magnifying glass and stuff like that. And as Rashi points out, we never say, the Gemara in Erevin, remember, had this, we never say, and so-and-so also said, unless it's a direct continuation of a previous Mishnah that so-and-so had said. And because of that, Rashi suggests that the whole Seder of the Mishnayos in this parak has been messed up, and that really this Mishnah should come immediately after the Mishnah about the toothpicks. Tosus argues, and he says that that would mean that all of the sugyas that we introduced that were interrelated in so many delicate ways are also out of order, which I find difficult to believe, says Tosus. And therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam suggests that the whole sugya in Erevin that says you never say v'od unless it's a direct continuation of La Capitan's previous Mishnah, that that is only true where there's a variation that one of them was a kula and one of them is a chumra. But if both of them are continuing kulas, then there's no problem in saying v'od even after the interruption. So we bring you this word from our Capitan, after the previous interruption, according to Tosfos, and it's still going back to the Mishnah of yesterday, toothpicks, etc. Continue, please, Kapitan.
We just had it in the oven, so this is an ode mutzal me'esh.
Oh, gosh. Go ahead. It's too sophisticated. So, furthermore, he said another kula. And what was that? That omeid adam al hamukta. So he can remember what a mukta is. A classic mukta is grapes that have been put up on the roof to dry, or figs that have been put up on the roof to dry. And this Mishnah we had actually brought earlier, because we were talking about what good is it to say that you are going to eat from this if it isn't really edible because it's a mukta, remember? And we ended up saying that it's talking about that it's the type of raisin that some people will eat, but other people prefer a more dried raisin. So therefore, because the person was koveya, I'm going to eat, so that turns it into something that is considered to be food for him. And therefore, this is what Reb Eliezer is being mechadesh, that omeid adam al hamukta, even though they're not completely dry because there are people who like them drier, and he can do this. Now, this is wild. Look at this. Erev Shabbos during Shemitah. What in the world? Erev Shabbos during Shemitah? Whoa. Okay, so as you can see, we're getting into some hot stuff over here. So he can do this on an Erev Shabbos during Shemitah, and he can say, I intend to eat from this mukta tomorrow. Whereas the Chachomim say, no, an intention is insufficient. You have to actually, in order to make it mukhan, you have to define what the part is that you are going to eat. So he has to be Rosh Shem, the Yomar, Mikan, the Ad Kan. I'm going to eat from here till here. So this, according to Rashi, is a question of Breira. If you hold of Breira, so then when you said, what I'm going to take tomorrow is going to be from here, then what it is that you took is what you were mechin. If you hold, you have to actually define it. So then they don't hold of Breira, and you would have to actually specifically say, this is what is mucha. Now, what in the world does does this have to do with Shemitah and so on? So there's a couple of preliminary points that we need to know. One preliminary point is like this, that normally speaking, something that is kavua for ma'aser, which means it's now both completed its malacha. So there's gemar malacha, and then it was roya p'nei habayit, or roya p'nei hachotzer, but you didn't just bring it into a garden or something. So it's now actually in your home, or it came into your chotzer. So the halacha is over there. Once that happens, you now cannot eat it as a, just claim it's achilas aroi. You can't do that anymore. It's already kavua for mice. But if it was not nigmar malakto, then even if you bring it into your house, you can still utilize it to just take a quick snack off. You take a bite off of it because that's achilas aroi. And a house is only koveya, something that's nigmar malakto. So there are very special cases, which we're going to be talking about, one of which is Shabbos. Something, since it says v'karata l'shabbat oneg, so something that is kavua for achila of Shabbos is considered to be kavua, even though it wasn't brought into the house, and therefore it is also usur to eat without taking off maisa. Now, the next thing that you have to know is that it is not clear whether the question of Shabbos would be koveya even in something that wasn't nigmar a malakto, or whether it's like a chotzer or a bias. A chotzer or a bias is not koveya without gemar malacha. So the question is Shabbos only taking the place of the chotzer or the bias, or is Shabbos also taking the place of nigmar a malakto? That's what gets us involved in Shemitah here. Because once it's Shemitah, you can effectively ignore the problem of the food not being roy to eat anyway, because since you made it mukhan for Shabbos, you now have turned it into something that you can't eat, because it was a miser, you see. So in order to avoid that complication, what we can talk about is that if it's during Shemitah, where anyway there's no din of taking off trumas and misers during Shemitah, because of this evyonei amecha with chayat ha-sadeh. So we learn out from there that just like Chayat HaSadeh, we never found one taking off Trumas and Maisras, because, I mean, even Reb Pinchas Ben Yoyer's Chamor is not Chayat HaSadeh. So therefore, the same way that Chayat HaSadeh is Pater for Trumas and Maisras, so too are humans Pater for Trumas and Maisras during Shemitah. However, the fact that we only wanted to say this Mishnah on an Erev Shabbos during Shemitah may have massive implications. Because then it seems to say, but if it weren't during Shemitah, then we'd have other problems. Namely, the fact that we were koveyed for Shabbos would mean that we couldn't eat it because now we have to take off trumas and maisers. So you can see that there's a lot of fascinating implications to the extent at which being making something at a muktzah would have implications not only for Shabbos, but for other dinim as well. So this is what our Gemara is going to be involved in. Now, the Tanan Hata, what we do have is the Mishnah in Maasrot, where it says over there that Tinokot Shetamnu Te'enim Mi'erev Shabbat. So here, we're talking about kids. Now, it doesn't mean only kids. It means even kids. So we've got kids who saw some yummy figs. They were afraid that their siblings were going to get the yummy figs. So they took the figs and they hid them like squirrels in the garden so that they would be able to eat them on Shabbos. So they said, okay, we're going to eat these figs on Shabbos, okay? So they were tamnu to any mirror of Shabbos, and they forgot to take off miser. This is not talking about during Shemitah, obviously. So now they didn't eat them on Shabbos. After Shabbos, they cannot eat them even as a snack. Even achilas arai, they have to take off meiser, apparently because since it was Shabbos, the chiddush is that even kids, because this is based on a Gemara Chulin, that children who normally don't have das to be koveya things, but if they make a statement that is coupled with an act, so they say, we're going to be eating with this for Shabbos, and then they hide it in a place like a squirrel would hide it, where they can get to it, then it's considered to be machshavto nikeret mitoch ma'asav, and then they are considered to be able to be koveya, even though they don't have das. So that's why we brought up tinokot. Obviously, if adults would say it, so for sure this would be true. Once you were koveya it as a food for Shabbos, you are telling me that this is usur to eat without meiser. So, another Mishnah, which is related, is also from Masechet Maaseros, and it says there, if it's not Nami, suppose somebody had these figs, he spreads them out in his chatzar, because he wants them to dry. That's what it means when it says Amavir. It means he puts them out to dry them in his chatzar for purposes of liktzot. His kids are allowed to continue eating from them, and they are potter from Maaser, upaturin. So, because what we're talking about over here is completely edible figs. Right now they're edible. And since we put them in to dry and we are going to be pressing them into the fig cakes that we always do, so we do not have a gmar malacha situation. Therefore, even though they're in your chatzar, but remember that a chatzar cannot be koveya for maisras unless it was gmar malacha. And in this case, there's no gmar malacha because it's only considered to be completed after you dried it out to press it into the fig cakes, which was the purpose of your ultimate manufacture. Fine. So now what we have over here are two Mishnayos, all right? The first one proved that if something is set aside for Shabbos, then that is mechayev a kvias in Meiser, as if it was roya pnei abayit or roya pnei achotzer. The second Mishnah says that a chotzer, which would normally be koveya, is only koveya bigmar malacha. So, but this is not a gmar malacha. Now the question is, what would be the din of Shabbos? Can Shabbos be limited to being the same type of kviyas as a chotzer, and therefore only if it was gmar malacha is Shabbos koveya? Or can Shabbos be koveya even more than a chotzer, and therefore, even if it wouldn't be gmar malacha, the very fact that this food was set aside to eat on Shabbos is a gemar malacha and a kviyas all in one. So it would be like completion and bringing it into the bias at once. This was Boi Minei Rava Mirav Nachman. I want to know what's left out of this Mishnah is where we substitute Shabbos for the chatzar or for the bias. What would be the din? Shabbat mao shetikba mukta lamaaser. So something that was set aside to dry, which means that it is not yet considered to be gmar malacha. But would the very fact that I set it out to be eaten on Shabbos, could it be koveya, even a davar shelo nigmar malachto? And that's what I want to know. Now, these words, davar shelo nigmar malachto, Rashi says is a ridiculous added piece that slipped into the Gemara from somebody who was being mefarshit, because muktzah by definition is a davar shelo nigmar malachto, so why do we have to talk it out? Okay, but anyway, it slipped in. It's the pirish of what muktzah means. So here's my question, says Rava. Do we say that since we have this special halacha, which is vikarata l'shabbat onek, so therefore Shabbos is koveya come hell or high water, even in a davar shelo nigmar malachto? Or do we say, it's no different than a chatzar, and it has the chashivas of a chatzar, but it can only be koveya bedavar shenigmar malachto, yes, but bedavar shalom in nigmar malachto, lo kava. What would you say? Says Reb Nachman to Rava, well, I'm telling you what I know. Shabbat is kovat even if it's lo nigmar. Bein bedavar shenigmar malachto, bein bedavar shalom nigmar malachto, 100%, you will not be able to eat it, even as a snack, achilas arai, once it was set aside for Shabbos. Said Rava, I mean, what, do you pick that out of a hat? I mean, look, the information as given is that a chotzer and bayit acts on food to be koveyat for miser, and Shabbos acts on food to be koveyat for miser. So what makes you say, do you have any proof of your idea that Shabbos is more? Why not say that Ema Shabbat Umyed Chatzer? Just like a Chatzer cannot be Koveya unless it was a Dover Shema Malachto, Shenigma Malachto, so then Shabbat should also not be able to be Koveya unless it's a Dover Shenigma Malachto. I just want to know where you're basing it on. I mean, I can't just take it because you say you feel that way. Omar Le said, Reb Nachman, I'm not telling you something that I feel that way. I'm telling you something that I was mekabel as a limud aruchu biyadenu. This is a very complex sugya that I was taught by my rabbeim, that Shabbat is kovat bein bedover shenigmar melachto, bein bedover shalod nigmar melachto. Okay, so this is the background now to why we are bringing up our Mishnah. So the Gemara wants to show that Reb Nachman was right, and this was actually his own son wanted to prove that his father was right, by bringing our Mishnah. Omer Mar Zutra Bereda Reb Nachman, my father's 100% right. Because look at this Mishnah over here in Masechet Beitzah, and you will see that he's right. Because it says over here, the old Amar Rabbi Eliezer, a person can stand next to a Muktzah, Erev Shabbos, during Shemitah, and he can say that I'm going to be eating from here. Now, why the heck do you think that the Mishnah started talking about Shemitah? This is crazy. Why is Shemitah a factor? I'll tell you why. Because the only reason that this works is because it's Shemitah. And the taima is that since there's no chiyuv of taking off Meiser during Shemitah, that's why it works. But if it were not Shemitah, you would not be able to use this muksa on Shabbos to eat from. Why? Because you'd have to take off Meiser. Why do I have to take off Meiser? It's not Nigmar Malachto. I just want a snack. So you see that the very fact that it's Shabbos means that it's Nigmar Malachto. Reb Nachman, my father, basically was telling Rava what he should have noted from a Mishnah. So my timer explained to me why it's usher during other years. Obviously, lav mishum de Shabbat kava. So if you see from our Mishnah that Shabbos is koveya, even where it's lo nigmar malachta. Says Rav, now wait a minute, that's not true. I mean, maybe the very fact that the guy stood there and he said, I'm going to be eating from this, means that it is nigmar malachta. Because since in his eyes it's now suitable for eating, so that's the end of the problem. So kiven diomar mikan ani ochel machar. So now he was koveya on himself the chiyuv of meiser as nigmar malachto. So then this would be a standard case of Shabbat being koveya like the chatzer. Nothing to do with it being koveya for a davar shelo nigmar malachto. It is nigmar malachto. Oh, come on, says Manzrutra, please. If that would be true, then why would the Mishnah bother talking about Shabbos? If the point of the discussion over here is to teach me that when a person accepts upon himself that something is edible, it becomes chayev in Meiser, I mean, this should have appeared in Maseches Meiseres. It has nothing to do with Shabbos. You're bringing it up in a Mishnah that has to do with Shabbos and Yontev and whether it's Muchan. Well, why do you think it's bringing it up here? The only connection, darn it, to Shabbos is the fact that Shabbos is Koveya. So why did we have to bring up the Shabbos issue? Obviously, because the Kviyas of Shabbos, if it were in Shemitah, would have been a problem. And that's exactly why it's brought over here in Masechet Beitzah. Otherwise, it doesn't belong here. So, Iachi Ma'ari Shabbat, Afila B'chol Nami. You could have said this. If the fact is that Shabbos is not going to affect the dinim of Meiser in this case, because anyway it's in the Chatzar, and you're telling me Shabbos doesn't do anything about something that was not Nigmar Malachto, so then why are we talking about it? It's irrelevant to the discussion. You say that this would be true anytime during the year. No. You're 100% right, but you're missing an additional point that we do learn from the Mishnah. The reason that the Mishnah wants to talk about Shabbos is exactly the opposite. Maybe, and I'll prove it to you in a moment, because maybe the point over here is to tell us that Tevel is actually considered to be Muchan on Shabbos, because Im Avar V'Tikno, let's say somebody had gone ahead and you're minyaraisa, you're allowed to take off trumas and maisos on Shabbos, right? The Rabbanan answered it because it's similar to tikkun mana. So what this Mishnah is goofa coming to tell me is that since if someone would do it, it would be considered to be mitukan. So once it's telling us the halacha of muksa over here, it wants to also tell us a second point that in, since I'm mentioning over here, shvius versus non-shvius, you should know that the only problem that we would have is not because it's muksa. The only problem that we would have had would because I'd have to take off maisras, which means that if somebody would take off maisras, there would be no problem of muksa. And that is the issue, and that's the only issue. So even though you'd think that it was usr because it's muksa machmas isser, it's not true. The Mishnah is coming to tell me, once you took off the problem of it's not being mukhan, you're automatically making it roy for eating on Shabbos because it can theoretically be mitukan, and if somebody would be mitukan, mitaken, you could eat it. Whoa. Where do you see that from the Mishnah? I'll tell you where I see it from the Mishnah. The Mishnah says the weirdest thing. The Mishnah says that omed adam, it doesn't say im amad adam, right? It says omed adam, the thing to do is you can get up there and take a stand, man. Stand up right there, say what it is that you're going to be eating, and as long as it's shvius, you've got no problem. Okay? And therefore, if it would not be shvius, then don't do it. Not if you did it, it wouldn't be good. That's why I'm talking about the case of, no, go right ahead. But if it's not shmita, I'm not going to say, go right ahead, because the idea would be that I need to have somebody do an isser in order for me to eat it. That I wouldn't do. If the Mishnah held that it actually would end up being muktzah because of the fact that it was tevel, and even if somebody was mitakenet, I couldn't have eaten, so then the correct wording would have been, im amad adam, erev Shabbos, b'shvius, then it's considered to be muhan. So then the implication would be that if he would do that in non-shvius, so then it wouldn't be good. It would still be muktzah. Why would it still be muktzah? Because it would be tevel. That's the point. But since the Mishnah insists on using the word of omed adam, so it's coming to tell me, no, your only problem over here is the question of somebody needing to be mitakenet. And therefore, I'm talking to you about shvius. And the difference between shvius and chol, or non-shvius, chul in years, the difference between shvius is only the question of whether you should or not. That's the question, but it certainly would work. Okay, so by choosing bedavka, this word, it's gufa telling me a completely different chiddush. The chiddush being, if somebody was mitaken tevel, you're allowed to eat it on Shabbos. And it's not considered to be muktzah machmas iser. Okay, well, this is a complex argument. Best really to review it. So we went through the halachas that Rabbi Barnea asked for before we started the daf. I was hoping we would have a chance to continue some of the more complex issues, but just to remind you, so what we discovered is that there are alternatives to every last one of Rashi's assertions prior to the Mishnah. And in fact, it's not considered to be a davar she'eino miskaven just because your intention of why you're doing something is going to be for a different purpose. And it's not considered to be ipso facto mutter, according to Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that you're allowed to do hechsher, even makshire yochel nefesh, because he doesn't say that when it comes to issues that have to do with long-term results, such as having a kli handy. And furthermore, it is not true that according to Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Shimon, who would not hold a muksa, that we would have a problem. We would have no problem necessarily of saying that etzim are only for hasaka. We would, because it has to be roi for hasaka, so it cannot be retifta, and therefore even that would not be true according to Rabbi Shimon, and he would not say there's no problem of mukta. And furthermore, that the din of tikkun mona would certainly not be relevant to the machlokas about mukta between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda, and Rashi was ignoring tikkun mana, which was dependent in the other machlokas about whether yesh binyan bekelim on any level or ein binyan bekelim on any level. And I mentioned to you that according to the Taz, there's even a deraisa in a makkeh b'patish on kelim. My father's atzal, because of that Taz, used to be very makbid, even though there's so many tshuvas that are matir. Rav Fisher has all sefer being matir, the idea of opening up bottle tops and so on. But because of his chashash, that maybe it's possible to come to an Isser D'Oraisa, he would always be very makbid on that from fear of the D'Oraisa. Okay, we can discuss more about this tomorrow. We've run out of time, but as you can see, it's extremely, extremely rich and complex sugyas. And boy, this Masechet is really chock full of so many incredibly different things, each and every one of which has contemporary implications by the dozens, that it would be nice to have a year to actually learn this Masechet, let me tell you. But okay, we'll do our best. So have a wonderful day, everybody. Besorot tovot. Thank you for your patience with me and giving me this extra time. And I hope we'll have an opportunity to discuss some of the tshuvas that are the modern tshuvas. The big machlokas of Rav Shlomo Zalman has a lot to say. Rav Fisher had a lot to say. Rav Yashiv had a lot to say. And as I said, the Groh has a lot to say. The Chasam Ish has a lot to say. There's tons of stuff still to discuss about this tomorrow. Kol tov to you all. Much love and gratefulness for your coming and giving me the opportunity to learn with you.